Accession number 31427, Mr. Albert Clark, Real One. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Clark?
Actually born at Rush Green, Romford, which is just down the road here, on the 11th of June, 1932.
And where were the family actually living? Were they living in Rush Green?
In Rush Green, Romford, yes. And then at when I was at the age of two, I moved to Upminster.
Now, could you tell us a bit about your family background? You know, what your dad did for a living, your mum, what kind of a family you came from?
Yeah, my father was just an ordinary labourer, working on various jobs around. He worked on one construction job in the Bletchley Park, the secret place, and that's as far as I remember. Then he went on after or during the war, putting buildings right, windows in, the bombed out buildings, all any locality all round the Essex around here.
So he was he a skilled building, a tradesman, or was he
more labour? No, just an ordinary labourer. But
did he get a reasonable wage? I mean, how well off was the family?
Well, pro rata to what they used to get the work, he was just quite enough to run a reasonable family, like, you know.
And did your mother work?
No, only she was done a work. We worked in a dairy in Upminster. She was doing all the milk and different bottles and all like that, you know. So dairy worker she was, like, you know.
And how many of you were there in the family? Any brothers and sisters?
Yes, well, I had two stepbrothers, and another brother. I'll tell you who we worked there for. Me and my younger brother that's died now, younger than us. He was born in 1939. We go back to my first brother. I had a brother in the Royal Marines that was killed on HMS Hood on the 26th of May 1941. That's when he... And he got killed when he was 20 years of age.
I'll come back to that when we get on to the war. So, and your other brothers?
My second brother, he was in the 2nd Battalion of the Essex Regiment, and he done D-Day landings, and plus, wherever training they had to do. That was that too. Then my other brother that was in the Royal Marine Engineers, it was a regiment formed during the war, the Royal Marine, but they made it because he was good at the bulldozers and rollers and bridge building. And he went into France 6 months after D-Day landing, clearing up, bridge building, and so forth. Brother Alan, he was National Service before they expanded the National Service, and he done Kuala Lumpur, Malaya, and Jessendon, British North Borneo. And then when he came back, demobbed 2 years. That was that. Then I had
tell me about a bit. So you brought up in Upminster, mainly. Tell us about your education. You just started school before the war started. Do you remember anything about before the war, the school?
Well, yeah. I was went to school at the infant school, I call it infant school, at St Mary's Lane, Upminster. Right? And then I went from there, 11 years of age, I went down to Gaines Senior Secondary Modern School at Corbett's Tay, which is now in the area of Upminster. And from there, I left school at 14.
Were you evacuated at all?
Yes.
Hang on, we'll come back. So you started your education, and then do you remember the outbreak of war? I mean, I know you were only seven, so...
Yeah,
I mean,
definitely.
Tell us, what do you remember about the lead-up to and the outbreak of war?
I can remember when the announcement came over the radio. That's by 11 o'clock on such and such a date. If they hadn't heard from Germany, like Munich, I think it was, if they hadn't heard by that time, then we would be at war with Germany. And he said, I'm now to say that we have not heard. So we now declare we're war with Germany.
And how, as a little nipper, did you feel? I mean, did you understand it at all?
Basically, yes. I think when you're younger and what we where we lived and so forth, it was all military and all. And I come from a military family, you might as well say, you know. And then I had two sisters, obviously, on top of that, you see. With two sisters, there's quite a bunch of us, like, you know. Yeah.
So you did understand it?
Fully understand.
Now, so what about evacuate? I mean, we were issued with gas masks, do you remember that?
Yes, gas masks, yeah.
What do you remember about that?
Well, just the gas masks, we got some. I think we had to register. Mum had to register as an office, like, you know. And then the chap came round with all these various gas masks, you know. They put this ugly one on. And my brother, Alan, which was born in 39, had the what they call the Mickey Mouse one, you know.
What was that like?
Horrible. Claustrophobic, obviously, you know. He had one where they put the baby right in and put the drawstrings on. And then they had the other one, Mickey Mouse, little round ones, coloured yellow and bright, just, I suppose, for the children, with like a sort of rubber nose. It was all sort of, that's how it was, that's the one.
And what was yours like?
My one was the long nose one with the glass over like that. And they used to have like sort of a mask on the bottom. We had it delivered. And then some months after, they came round and they put an extra filter on the end with just the sellotape round, you know, like plastic sellotape round it, and made it a longer nose. That's that.
And what was it like to wear? Did you try them on?
Yeah, we used to have a practice, and the chap, the air raid warden, local, he kept our local sweet shop, actually. And he came down and he used to, make us put it on and put a cardboard underneath and trap the air and all that sort of thing, you know.
And what was it like to wear?
Very uncomfortable. Because being young, we just thought it was more or less a plaything, you know what I mean?
Now, was there any question of you being evacuated straight away?
No. I was at school, and this was way back when the doodlebugs was the flying bombs.
Now that's later. See, that's 43, 44. They start.
Yeah. Well, that's
what about before?
But during the war, I was at home all the time. The actual bombing, and the
right. Okay. Well, so you were evacuated only when the doodlebugs came.
Only when the doodlebugs
right.
came.
Well, now how before? I mean, the phony war. You might not even remember the phony war much, but do you remember things like them bringing in rationing, food rationing, clothing rationing?
Well, yeah, all of it.
Tell me about food rationing first.
Sweets. Sweets. We used to get one quarter of sweets per month. One quarter of sweets per month. And if you had a quarter, if you had so many sweets of that, they wouldn't give you anything else, you know what I mean? You could either have chocolate or sweets. You couldn't mix it, you know. That's at our local shop. So that was that.
So that's all you got?
All you got.
Now, did you have a sweet tooth?
If when we had the money, we would obviously go dashing down to the local shop and spend our money, and that was it. Eat sweets and
then nothing for a month.
Nothing for a month.
Now, what about food rationing? I mean, your mum would manage that, wouldn't you?
We was reasonably off because we was in the country, semi-rural.
More than it is now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's the same. Well, there's a lot of more houses crept in like they do, but it's on the green belt area, you know. But we was there, and we was lucky because we had a big garden, and my father was a very, very good gardener, perpetual, you know. And we had potatoes, vegetables, you name it, we had it. Perpetual, right the way through, we had enough potatoes to last us through the winter. And of course, that was that. And my mum was a very good cook. She used to cook real wholesome stews and so forth. But of course, we used to have eggs. We used to actually give eggs away from in our 8 bungalows where we used to live.
So you had chickens in your garden?
So we had chickens, yeah. So we ate up to about 50 or 60 chickens, you know. And of course, we had chicken, you know, whenever we wanted it. We used to have breed rabbits, only for eating rabbits, ducks, and geese.
So it was a large garden. How big was it?
The garden was, I should say, 150, 200 feet long by 50, 60 feet wide.
So more an allotment size than a garden.
Yeah.
Now,
well,
I mean, what you'd think of as a...
I had 10 rod allotment, and that was what, 1, 2, 3, 4, possibly six allotments at 10 rod. 60. 60 rod, if you know the area. It's quite a big rice, you know. Yeah.
Now, so you didn't suffer much from food rationing at all?
Yes. Now, that's the backup. But, I mean, we was had the 2 ounces of meat. I look what you're a week. 2 ounces of meat a week. Irrespective if it was... sometimes they used to swat around, give you a bit of meat, and if you had corned beef, you couldn't have both. You know, as far as I tell you, but it was 2 ounces, you know. Very, very slack. But of course, we never lived on chickens. We used to subsidise us, ourselves, with chicken, you know. I can remember the bread rationing, the BUs. They call it BU, bread units, on the back of your ration book, you know. Oranges. Well, oranges and bananas, you could go 5-6 months before you ever see one. One orange. My mum used to, the crack used to go round, the oranges are in the local shop, you know. She used to walk 1.25 miles. There and back, mile quarter, to queue up sometimes 30 minutes to get each ration book, one orange. That's how they used to, and bananas. That was basically fresh fruit was very, very short. But of course, there again, we lived in a farming area, and we used to get apples. Out of the orchards and whatnot, you know, things like that.
So, what about clothing rationing?
Clothing rationing, clothing coupons, right?
Yeah. Did it affect you much? Or
we never had too much money to buy clothes. You know what I mean? But it did affect you. You know what I mean? I've been to school with a army shirt. Pair of short trousers or, you know, like gabardine or whatever they were like that, and boots or shoes, you know. I had a lovely pair of boots, lace up here like that, 12 and sixpence in old money. I mean, I can remember all that, you know. Yeah, as regards clothes, but we was always clean, you know what I mean? We always, body-wise, you know what I mean?
Now, so what about, how did the war affect you? Like, well, what about air raid precautions? Firstly, there's the blackout. Do you remember the blackout?
Blackout, definitely, yeah. Right, we blacked out. We had to black out before you put any gas. We had the butane, not butane, gas mantle, like, you know, paraffin, but it had like a mantle on, like, you know.
So how did you black out?
I mean, we had to black out, right, black curtaining, you know, like black, anything black's material, and draw the curtains in. You had to be very, very careful. And they used to, the air raid warden up our road, used to go come up and check to see whether you were showing a glimmer of light. And he used to call out, you know, put that light out and all that, you know. Anyway, yeah, so I definitely knew all about, and the blackout had to go up, you know, usually in the winter time, about 3-4 o'clock, you know what I mean? In the autumn, because it's dark, you know.
And what was it like out in the streets, you know, when it was dark?
Very, very, well, we was only allowed to go local, but it was very, very dismal. No street lighting, no signs, no street signs, you know what I mean? Because they took them off prior to when all the army was collecting in our area for D-Day landings. That's back a bit. But they demolished all the metal railings off the schools. Any metal railing, not ask for permission or anything like that, cut them off. All the old saucepans, some old dears used to go there, take a saucepan that's got penny pot pet menders in, you know what I mean? They used to have the old penny pot mender to block the old leaks, and they used to come back and pinch a good saucepan, you know what I mean? Yeah. They used to take a saucepan, a good saucepan, and chuck it, obviously. Yeah.
Now, tell me about the air raid shelter. Did you have an Anderson, or did you?
Anderson.
Not a Morrison indoors,
no, it was like, no, that. Anderson.
Now, who fitted it, and what was it like?
It came along, the Coleman, believe it or not. They was the only ones that had mobile. The Coleman came along and delivered the Anderson shelter. Actually, threw it in the front garden. They just unloaded 6 bins, RSJs that goes around the bottom, in the bottom, 2 handles, I can tell you all about it, you know, the 3/4 bolts, washers, that. And we, us kids and the elder brothers, had to dig the hole. You know what I mean?
How big would it be?
Hole. Now, they had 2 air raid. Well, they had 3 Andersons. They had one with just a couple of people. That was only 4 arches. 4, 2, 4. That's about 4 foot or 5 foot that way. By, you know, the top. But then you got a bit of size, about our size at then. We had 6, so that stepped it up. But the people that had really big families, they used to double up, you know. You had a great long sort of tunnel with that, yeah. And it round our way, it got ages and ages and ages before they ever, council I think used to come in, put shuttering up and concrete, make so like they'd like a swimming pool, you know what I mean. With the metal outside. They only cement them out, like, you know. But not all of us had it, you know.
Did they flood?
Yes.
Because, you know, wouldn't, you know what happens when you dig a hole in the ground. Yeah, depends where the water level is.
Yes, yes. Many a time we sat there on an old wooden chair with, well, duck balls nowadays, but lumps of wood, and sat there all through that time. And in the water.
How much water? Just a couple of inches or?
Well, we used to try ourselves, keep it bailed down, you know, I should imagine about like that.
But yeah, you're showing me about 2.5-3
yeah,
inches.
Yeah, yeah.
But how would you keep it down to that? I mean, would you bail out?
Bail it out. Just bail it out. Whenever we come to. Invariably, I can remember that we was in 1940-41, they really clattered us hard. That was bomb, you know, bomb.
Well, let's go on to that, because we'll look at... Yeah. Now, the real blitz starts around about September 40. But before that, did you see much of... the troops coming back after Dunkirk?
I never see the troops coming back, because we wasn't right down at Tilbury or the dock area.
No, I thought not.
But personally, I...
What about, you know, did you see anything of the aerial battle during the Battle of Britain?
Definitely.
What did you see of that?
I see you know, the dog fights, just within a little range from us, you know. Many a dog fights.
What do they look like? What could you actually see?
You see, invariably you couldn't pick them out. We say one German Messerschmitt 110, they used to come and that come over, and then they used to be going round and round and round, getting behind them, and then actually from where we live, well, where it was, I could hear the machine gun, you know, and short bursts, you know. And then all of a sudden they sort of disappeared, you know. They either cleared off and they come back. Yeah, Hornchurch Aerodrome was only, the size of a normal field. There's a field, a lane, another field, and Hornchurch Aerodrome was behind. Can I go on?
Yeah.
And I was over a field there again. I used to collect rabbits' food, dandelions, because rural, you see. Collect all that, and when they actually dive-bombed Hornchurch Aerodrome with Stukas or JU-88s or whatever they had, you know.
What do you see of that?
I actually heard all the guns, the big artillery fire guns all around long before they got there. And, yeah, I could hear a really high whine or scream of their aircraft. And I see the explosion of the bombs, sand and flames and dirt go up, stitching them up. And I learned at a later date, that about four or five Spitfires got turned over and they knocked them out on the ground. That's when they dive-bombed Hornchurch Aerodrome.
And that was Stukas?
I would say Stukas, yeah. Really scream, you know. And, about one, two, three, at least three bombs like that as they, that there.
You saw them going over, yeah.
See them going, yeah.
Now, what about when after the Battle of Britain, the bombing starts, the night bombing, and that's what they call the Blitz, September it starts. What do you remember of that for you?
Well, there again, all the lot. They used to come over during the daytime, and then we've sat out there as us kids are laid up like that, and I've seen actually, literally, maximum what they could put up with the Jerry's, what they put up, come over, and we never had nothing to knock them out, you know, not enough, you know. Only had a couple of Spitfires on Hornchurch, and they used to pass it over to up here at the local aerodrome up the M11, and they used to go up and bomb London and then come back. They were real big ones, you know. JU-88s and the Dorniers and, you know, the names of all their bombers.
Did they bomb your area, you know?
Yes. They used to, in the front field, our roofs and our windows was blown out twice.
Now, what was it like? I presume you were in your Anderson when that happened.
No, I was in my bungalow. I was in the bungalow when they, that night.
What was it like?
Well, there again, at my age, everybody was very frightening, you know. And we used to get under the table, all the beds. Went after it all simmered down, you know, till we come out to look at our house, the roofs was off, and all the glass was in our beds. So if we'd have been in our beds, we'd have been shredded. That's front side. We had a three-bedroom bungalow, and there was all. Then going on from there, in as regards the bombing, that was HE, high explosive, you know, and that was just about from here to across the road and in the field, a bit further than their houses there.
And they weren't about 40-50 yards away.
Bomb it. And they wasn't very. They wasn't little tiny bombs either. They was like sort of 500,000 pounders, you know, the really big ones, you know.
And were you bombed out by that? I mean, did you carry on living in the house?
They patched us up, put tilts over the roofs, and where the old wartime get-together had the feeling like they do up East End, what it used to be like, My dad and the other couple of husbands and that up the road and the sons all put the roofs back to the right. At least it was made it waterproof, and the windows was boarded up with very cheap tarpaulin stuff, you know, like tar, paint, cardboard. Invariably when the wind blew, it'd break it, you know, split it, you know. But it was like that for weeks and weeks and weeks. And then they replaced the glass. Lo and me, after that, it all got bombed out again. But going on from that bombs, the second lot, they across the field a bit further, they had 5 to 6 unexploded bombs, or a stick of bombs, right across like that. And, well, I reckon if there was 7 bombs in the stick, the other one would have been in a corner of our front garden, I reckon, because that was the bomb disposal squad that was there that dug them out. They said that they knew the measurements, you know, stitched it like, you know. That. We used to have notorious oil bombs, they called them. The oil bombs used to come down. It's not, well, it should act like napalm. It used to go in and it was all, when they didn't explode, they just burst on the ground, because us kids was naughty. We used to go around and pick up bits and pieces of the stuff, like, and it was all full of green oil. Green. That's basically what it was. And, you know, we didn't know how dangerous it was, you know. And they had another bad one, was a phosphorus bomb. It could be in the ground, which I know, because my dad was in the gravel pits, you know, worked on there, and they dug out the gravel pits, 20, 25 years after, and when the machine dragged through it, it set alight, you know. Phosphorus, that's phosphorus. So,
now, anything else you remember from that? You know, just stories from that time.
Stories, well, you know.
What happened to you, you know?
Just that. Well, we used to go to school, and when we was at school, invariably we sat, particularly lunchtime, we used to have, at that time, we had cooked dinners at Gaines Seton Senior School. And, of course, the siren went, we had to immediately all go down the air shelter. And our dinner was come back. They had to put a plate over it to keep it warm, but it was always cold, you know what I mean? You know, when we come back, that's a little story of when at school.
What was it like in the school air raid shelter? I mean,
We, again, senior secondary modern, we had underground ones, right? But the school in Upminster, we had surface shelters, like little bungalows without no... with glass walls up the front, you know, a 9-inch concrete flat on a, you know, like a bunker, like, you know.
And were kids scared? What was it like? What was the atmosphere like in there?
In the school, the lights was on, electric, and the lessons still went on in the air raid shelters, you know, as long as and as easy as possible, like, you know. Yeah.
So people weren't that scared?
By that time, you sort of, I think you get sort of go to accept it more or less within figure of speech, like, you know. I think you'd like sort of get used to it more or less, you know, if as much as possible, like, you know. But getting back to the bombing. We got hit twice with thousands of incendiary bombs.